counselor. She's a...
Welcome to Awesome My Mice. Love you and I, cause I love you so much. Oh, I just love you. I just like help. I just like help. I just like you too. I just like you. I just love you. Happy New Year. I love you. Say goodbye. You're going to school. And that's okay. Yum, 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 yum. I just love you.
Hi, welcome to Optimize My Life. Today we're presenting a start to a show. Go ahead.
You talk about artistic people. Ariana seems like she's a very artistic person.
Ariana, she is.
Sings a song, you know.
She is my creative genius.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she's part of the reason why I do what I do, both my kids. And that's, you know, what we're talking about when it comes to autism. So we're going to start out with what is autism? Because, you know, there's so many variations, and it used to be like Asperger's and this and this and this, and they got rid of that. And now it's all about numbers and the degree you are and how you fall on a scale. And understanding, you know, because we don't understand a lot about it, because we don't understand a lot about the brain. We're getting better understanding it, but there's still so much that we don't know and we can't do. Because really the only way you can really fully study a brain is when someone passes away.
Yep.
And also, the easiest way that I explain autism is it's a wiring. Speaking of Ariana, in a little bit, I'm busy, but I will help you. Is the wiring is a little different in the way that their brain works and communicates with each other, with this body, compared to regular people. And we don't know exactly what causes it. There's so many conspiracy theories out there. There's so many analogies. There's so many things. I personally just don't care what causes it. Because, you know, we talk about vaccines causing, we talk about this causing it. But the thing is if you go back and you look at the Bible times, you look at Socrates and Plato times, the symptoms of autism were there. They were just labeled differently. You know, a lot of times they were labeled deaf and dumb.
Yep.
So if they're, so, and they're finding out it's genetics and there's different things cause it, yeah, you know, back and forth. The solution I've come up with is I don't look at the problem. I don't look at what caused it because I don't care. It's just what it is and it's how it's there. Let's look for solutions to the problems. Let's look at how we can handle our kids and how we can still get them to be able to be productive citizens. We move forward from the cause. We don't play the blame game. You know, find out you're pregnant or you're expecting a child, your spouse is pregnant. You know, you always say you want a smart child, you want a healthy child. Okay, in reality is you really don't. You want a healthy child and you want a mediocre child. Because when you have genius kids, which happens a lot with autism, you got to spend more time figuring out how to keep them occupied because they will occupy themselves and chaos ensues the house. They get bored really easily, really quickly.
Yep.
And especially when they're real little, you can't give them all these toys that are age appropriate. Mentality appropriate because it's got small parts. They're going to chew on them. They're going to do whatever, get hurt. So you got to be creative in how to deal with all that. And that's why I always make the joke when I start out speaking to audiences about, you know, autism is expectations. And the hard part is you have this expectation for a healthy child. everything's going great. And then all of a sudden you hit that year stage, usually is when the symptoms start going, that you start noticing. And by the time they're two, they shut down. They're not talking, they're regressing, they're going back, and your world collapses completely. Because you, first thing is what did you do wrong? And I've been there, I've done that. I went through that. You know, I have two kids that are like that. Well, my daughter still talked. She was always delayed in all of her milestones. So it was developmentally delayed diagnosis until we figured out it was autism with anxiety. But that's when, you know, you go through the stress, you go through the depression. As a couple, you tend to fight and argue. You play the blame game. It happened in my house. Once in a while, it still happens in my house. Because you get so stressed out, because a lot of these kids, mine included, they have such high emotions that they can't regulate. And their go-to is to scream. And we all know kids have a very high tone, high-pitched scream that just sets you off. And they can go forever, more than regular kids do, because they don't get tired of it as fast as healthy kids do. And that's also why children, the parents of children with labels, special needs, gifted kids, however you want to call it, the divorce rate is higher, because you're not on the same page. You stop making time for yourselves, and you get so stressed out. And, you know, as an individual, when things go wrong, it's our go-to to blame somebody. If it's a doctor, if it's a spouse, whatever. And this is where you have to work really extra hard to take that time away and be able to do things as a couple. Just even talk. You know, in our house, playing a video game for 10, 15 minutes a night, doing something together that you both like, just to hang out for a couple minutes. Because it gets hard. You know, I've heard everything from, you know, vaccines and, you know, changing their diets to whatever new conspiracy comes out there. But there is no proof. They've tried, you know, right now the cutting edge is some medications that are given to kids at a young age can change the wiring in the brain and can give autism-like symptoms. Also, they have found genetic markers and why it runs in higher in certain families. And it's a recessive gene carried on the father's mother's side, which is a very unusual thing. But as of right now, we don't know 100%. So we need to stop focusing on that and move forward. You know, there's, once you're diagnosed, and here in this country, you go to the doctor, and what they'll do is they give you tests. 2 or 3 days, run a series of tests on the kids, they give you a degree. And then they run through this degree and they explain to you, well, this is what he can do, this is what they can't do, which I believe is so messed up. Because when you're 2, 3 years old, do you really know what your kid can do and not do 10 years from now? Not really. The easiest way to deal with this is, one, forget the label. Forget all that. Like, even right now, my children are 8 and 7. They don't know that they're autistic. That word doesn't come up when they're in earshot. All they know is that their brains are wired differently than other kids, and they have to try and do things differently than regular kids, that God made them special for a reason. Idea of why God made her special was she's here to help everybody else. She wants to be a voice for kids like her to make sure that they're not, don't feel as alone as she did. And she still does at times because she is the only kid like her in where we live. A lot of kids don't understand her. And luckily, now she's got a couple good friends for the first time that actually want to play with her and hang out with her and treat her like a regular kid, not like a kid with that's broken. My son, he's still figuring it out. He's just figuring himself out, which is great. You know, he likes to learn. That's what he does for fun. But accepting them for who they are is the first step. You got to stop looking at them like they're broken. And we went through that with our, in our household. You know, me being military the way I am and the way my brain works is that I figure out solutions. I train, I get, do the research. My husband, on the other hand, couldn't get past the diagnosis. And he had more experience with it than I did because I didn't even know what it was until the kids were diagnosed. And that's why it hit me so hard, because I thought I broke him. I thought I did something. And he still looked at him, and still sometimes when he gets overwhelmed, he'll still look at him like they're broken and played the blame game and everything else. And we almost didn't make it. But we have the good COVID story in our house because he was not working for a couple of weeks till he was deemed an essential employee doing construction that he could go back to work. So he was forced to spend 24/7 with his son and learned who he was and learned to see him through a different perspective because he had no other choice. And that brought that relationship together. And I don't think it would have happened if it wasn't for COVID. I have developed a couple of programs. One I deem is called the chaos theory. The chaos theory, I call it this because until you figure out how to work it, it's chaos. And it's how to teach regulation techniques in children, especially with autism, because they have a harder time. Their brains get such tunnel vision. And like with regular kids, you can show them a shiny object, and they'll instantly get attention to that. Well, with a lot of kids with autism, they have this tunnel vision, and it stays tunneled until they achieve their task. And they get so frustrated the more they try to do it and the more it doesn't succeed that they stand in their own way of succeeding. So teaching techniques on how to regulate, because the worst thing you ever tell a kid, especially special needs kids, is to calm down. Because if they knew how to calm down, they'd do it. And when, you know, as an adult, you know this, when you get so frustrated, you struggle sometimes calming down. But we hold these kids to a different standard, where you have a regular kid having a temper tantrum, you ignore it. But for some reason, because they have this label, you treat them differently. You get more frustrated with them when they do act out. You get more mad when they're dealing, because they need that little extra attention. You get more frustrated with everything that goes on around it. Yes, well, Daddy can help you. Well, Daddy can help you.
Mary, I'm glad you pointed out that at the age they are now, they don't know that they don't know. You had the conversation with me offline, and then Rick and I, and you were talking about the other night, how some grown people, we're not throwing nobody under the bus, we're not talking about nobody, we're talking about us, grown people. I'm one of them grown people. Some people don't know that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
God says, forgive them, Father, because they know not what they do. I used to make jokes with my mom all the time, who raised 7 kids, and I was a special one. She worked for Johnson & Johnson for 40 years, for 39 years. She's never missed a day and was never late. But I used to ask my mama, Mom, what are you going to do when you grow up? It was a joke between us because she was already a full-grown woman. But I used to joke at her because she had a job. You remember, I may have done what they said I did, but that's not really who I am. My mom was a Johnson & Johnson employee. So if you ask my mom, well, who are you? She was like most of us and tell you what she did for work. You can tell me what you do. Oak man, who are you? I'm a senior vice president for AT&T. I know that's what you do. But when I say flip the switch, Oak man, he says, oh, I'm a husband. Oh, I'm a father of 8 kids. Oh, I'm a grandfather. Now you're telling me who you are. You're not telling me what you do. So a lot of us, grown folks too, don't really know who they are. But I got a cliff note for you. I call him the divine creator, the one that created the universe. And he has given us creative genius. That's what Mary is facing. That's what you're facing. That's what all of us is facing. Creative genius, we just don't know exactly how to regulate it and how to get it to come out. Why? Because we're doing things that eyes have never seen. If you've ever been around autistic kids, they will do stuff that you've never witnessed before. And you think, wow, what's the matter with them? Nothing. They just see things like Mary just said in a tunnel type of vision in a different type of way. If you were my son, they thought one my smartest one. A genius. They thought he was something was wrong with him. He was special. But if you held up a flashy coin, a quarter, a silver dollar in front of him, he wasn't attracted. Wave up a green dollar bill and he'd come running to you. That to me, that was opposite. Didn't nobody understand it. It was a creative thing that a child was doing, but he had a passion for money. So I bought him these plastic dollars. They was huge. Mary taught me how to laminate stuff. And my whole son's childhood as a kid, 90% of the time if I wanted to calm him, I wouldn't say, Brian, calm down. I'll go get a stack of money and drop it down in front of him. He wouldn't put the dollars in his mouth, but he would play with them. Every now and then he might tear one or two in half. I'd tape it back together. I'd just leave him alone as long as I knew I could calm him with money. So all of us have what we call triggers. Adults have triggers. Teenagers have triggers. And then if they what they call spoil, they will have autistic tendencies. Instead of freaking out, they freak out because they have what they call a tantrum. Well, autism has those same types of traits, but tantrum to us means you're a spoiled little kid and you're whining because you're not getting what you want. But when we flip our creative brains on how we got to handle autistic child, we need to flip that switch in the same way and not say, what's the matter with you? Calm down. We need to figure out how they see it from their perspective and find out alternatives or ways on what we can do to direct them back to calmness. But as Mary said earlier, you don't walk up to an autistic kid and tell them to calm down. They'll look at you like you're crazy, like, what are you talking about? I don't know what you mean. I don't even know what the term autism means. And now you're going to yell at me. Even dogs don't like to be yelled at. But now you're going to yell at your kid and say, what are you doing? Get down from there. Oh, well, you really made them feel real good. Now the tantrum just went to a whole nother level because of your attitude of yelling, not their attitude of crying because they wanted something that you didn't understand. Back to you, Mayor.
All right, you brought up a good point. Temper tantrums. All kids throw temper tantrums. That's completely normal. Special kids have sensory meltdowns, and there's a big way to tell the difference between the two. Temper tantrums are caused by external things that can be controlled. You take a toy away. They can't get what they want, things like that. That's temper tantrum. A meltdown or a sensory issue looks along a temper tantrum, but it's based on internal and external that can't be controlled. Getting frustrated, not dealing with their environment. Getting emotionally unstable, getting frustrated, things that they can't process and deal with. It's done based on their environment. It could be something as simple as noises. It could be a lot of people in their environment. All them things can overwhelm somebody. With kids like this, that environment amplifies it even more. Oh, I have an uncooperative little boy today. So,
Mary, I had a kid once.
Go ahead.
I had a kid one time that was a child that was autistic, and he freaked out every day at lunchtime or dinner time. And I didn't care what food we were serving today. I tried to figure out what food he liked the best, and it ended up being 2 or 3 months later that I figured out he loves hot dogs, Oscar Mayer hot dogs. But when he would pitch a tantrum and not get what he wants, if we're having hamburgers today and not hot dogs today, then when you set the food down in front of him, guess what's getting ready to happen? You're going to be sweeping it up in a few minutes. But instead of me going off and thinking, why did you throw the food in the floor, oak man? I would say, okay, Bob, that's okay. Come and help me clean it up. I'll go get me a broom and say, come on, Bob, I want you to hold the dustpan. Come on now, hold it right here, hold it right here. And he would help me clean his mess up. That worked for a few weeks until I think he's having more fun cleaning the mess up out of the floor than he is eating it out of a plate. And then we have to have a very calm conversation. And instead of me serving his food up every day, putting it in his tray that got little sections in it, and letting him throw it in the floor, I decided to go get little Bob and bring him over and say, here, I need your help. I need you to help me fix the other children's plate. I'd hold the big a ladle, and I would let him scoop up some corn and pour it in Mary's plate and pour it in Ariana's plate and give Country Boy a little bit more. He likes corn. Can Country have a little bit more? And he would shake his head. Country likes a little bit more corn. Do you like corn, Bob? And then all of a sudden, the things that he was hating that he was throwing in the floor, after I switched to perspective and let him be the server versus being the receiver, everything started to work out, but I didn't see it from his perspective. I'm thinking, why is this kid throwing his food in the floor every day when I give it to him? But when I let him become the server instead of the reciprocant, everything changed. So with what we are doing with the kids and the way they label the autistic children, and Mary and I talked about the other night how they actually put them in isolation and tell them, if you do this, I'll give you a piece of candy. If you do this right, I'll give you a cookie. If you do this right, I'll pat you on the head. Animal conditioning. So we're going to have to figure out that what they've been doing is not working now. We're going to have to flip the switch and look at it from a different perspective.
Amen.
And we need to stop treating them. And this is part of the program that I have. It's called Manage, Evaluate, and Change.
Say it again, Mary. That was good. Wait, Mary. Say it again. Those were three good terms. assessment, evaluate, and what was the last one? Change.
Management, evaluate, and change. By that,
say it one
I
more
mean,
time.
You manage.
One more time. One more time.
Manage, evaluate, and change. You manage the situations. You manage the child. You evaluate what's going on, and you change what's not working. If
That's
it's not
formula,
working,
Mary.
Change it. Don't keep doing it if it's not working. That's where you keep butting heads. And the first step is cooperation. We forget. A lot of people forget that these kids have a mind of their own just because they're not verbally expressing it. We tend to forget and let them be little pieces of furniture in our house. We give them video games. We give them things to keep them entertained out of our hair because it's easier sometimes to deal with it that way than it is to actually deal with these kids. Accepting the child as a person. They're not a label. They're not a thing. They are a kid.
Thank you, Mary. I was going to jump on you again. They're not a thing that you just command around and think they're going to do what you say.
And that's why I truly believe.
If I could add something in here, Mary, I have a couple of things I heard you guys talking about. One of them was patience. We have to have patience when we're dealing with autistic people, not only children, but adults as well. And then inclusion, include them in with something that we're trying to get them to do. Like you did, like you mentioned with Country, when you were working with the boy, you got him to included in helping you to get the food ready and so forth on the plates and stuff, and he was very open to that. And then the other thing is acceptance. We have to accept the fact that even though there are people. We have to accept the way they are and to help them and find out ways to help them to be able to communicate and to be able to do things that we want them to do. And I found too that some of the autistic people that I've worked with and they have, most of them have very short attention spans. And so we have to keep doing things over and over and over and over again. And the high emotions they have, and they have short-term memory. That's another reason why we have to keep saying things over and over and over again.
It's not that they have, okay, that's the misconception. They don't have short-term memory problems. The problem is that the time it takes from going short-term to long-term, there's a misfire in the signal. So the reason you have to do it over and over again is it takes them longer for them to go from short-term to long-term to recognize into their system.
You have to build those connections. You have to build those connections.
Correct.
Between the short-term and the long-term. Yeah.
And it's not building them up. It's finding a new pathway.
Yeah.
And then, I wrote down what you just said. Make sure, you said, Oakman, make sure and include them, not exclude them. Example number two, when I was teaching into the school system and I found that little Bob always sits in the back of the room because he's not quite like the other kids. I think he came in on the short bus and the other kids got off the big long bus. But instead of excluding little Bob, I said, well, look, Bobby, since you're the special one, I want you to come help me teach him today. Bob, come on up here. I don't care if you sat in my chair while I was getting the instruction, whether you were standing there holding the eraser and the chalk next to the board or handing out paper to all the people, test paper. I didn't care what it was, Bob, but that's a very strong point, too, that we figure out how not to tell your kids, go away and play, and Mommy's busy. But how to include them, not exclude them. That was very powerful, Oakman.
In order to include them and to make it successful including them, you got to accept them. And not, I always believe that these kids are basically born adults. kids, nope. Regular kids are easily acceptable to doing things that they don't want to do. They don't need motivation. You ask them to do something, they're more than apt to do it. These kids already have that mind made up. This is how I am. This is who I'm going to be. This is what I'm going to do. I don't like it, that what you're doing, so I'm not going to do it. And they'll fight you tooth and nail for it. Accepting them as who they are, not trying to mold them into who you want them to be, which a lot of parents do. We live, a lot of us live our lives through our kids. What we didn't get to do as kids, we try to get them to do it to get that better environment or whatever we think deemed as better. Letting them be an individual that they are. Yes, sir.
It's funny you was to say that, too, because I was talking to an old friend. We go back to the high school days. He knew I spent 12 years of my life in college, and I think he spent about six. But at one point, he's almost 40 years old, and I said, man, how's dental school going now? I'm hypothetically speaking because I can't remember what he was majoring in, but whatever he was majoring in, old man, was the same thing his father and his grandfather did. And I said, well, wow, man, how's it going with your new career and your new study? He said, well, country boy, Mary, you just said it, the reason I'm bringing this up. They're like born adults. They're already set in their mindset what they want to be. But when us parents, your daddy was a dentist, your great-great-granddaddy was a dentist, and here comes little country boy. What do you think I'm going to be, old man, when I grow up? So I found my best friend in his sixth year in college, and I said, well, let me ask you a question, old man. What are you going to be when you grow up? He said, I'm going to be a dentist like my father and my grandfather. I said, but that's what they were. But what do you really want to be? I know they wanted you to be a dentist like them and follow in their footsteps. But he said, country boy, it's funny you was to ask me that because no one has ever asked me what I wanted to do. I said, well, you might want to have that conversation with your dad right now. What do you really want to do? He says, I want to play in the band. I said, you're joking me, right? You've been in college for 6 years studying to be a dentist, but you never told your dad that you wanted to play the tuba? Wow. But you see, Mary says that autism has a tendency to be able to say, I'm born into this world with the mindset of an adult, and I'm set in my ways. This is the way I want to do things. I don't care what you want me to do. I want to do it my way. So if we don't take the time to understand that and include them in some things and ask them, well, what do you think? They sometimes don't know what to think, but we can actually assist them in the process of letting them choose, let them decide on whether you want toast or whether you want dry bread. Do you want a cracker or do you want a cookie? Those are some of the things we do. But again, Mary, we get put into these categories and we categorize our kids and think that because the world will label them that they have to go through a whole life not even knowing who they are or what they want to do, but we point them in the direction on what we think is best for them. Sometimes parents don't know what to do, and that's what Mary and I are starting to find out, too. Now, a lot of parents out there that spent thousands of dollars running their kids through these programs that are animal training programs and not get any better results because they're not really understanding what autism actually is and accepting their children. Creative geniuses. The divine creator, y'all heard, that's what I call God, the divine creator who's the creator of the whole universe and everything that lives in it, that we allow our autistic, special, gifted children to be who they are and just enhance who they are, but make sure and include them, not exclude them.
Correct.
Amen.
You know, here's a big one. This is what comes into the different therapies that you go to. I don't believe in most of them because most of them don't work. Your kids are freaking out because they don't want to go. Question it. Why? They're not working. Why are you still going? What you have done in the past and what you're doing now, it's not, if it's not working, why are you still doing it? change it. Do something different. Because obviously if it doesn't work, if it's not benefiting and doing something to make things better, why are you still doing it?
What do you say to those parents out there that might be a little stressed, might be a little disappointed, might have worn their patience level out, might have spent a bunch of money on programs for their loved ones that didn't work, and now they might be in a position of being stuck? What do we tell the parents that's been trying things and been paying for these classes and courses and things that don't work? What do we do to those parents that don't know what to do?
Call me.
That's a toughie, because everything doesn't work for everybody. And you can't really just spit a solution out through the airways that says this plus this equals this. And if you got an autistic kid and you try this, this, and this, then try this. This will work. Not necessarily.
You can send me a message on Facebook, or you can call me 507-338-3725, and we will find a program that works for you.
Slower one more time. I'm dyslexic, Mary. Give me that phone number one more again, Mary, because my cousin is listening in.
507-338-3725. And if I don't answer, that means I'm in a meeting, and I'll get right back to you, so just leave me a message. There is no one-size-fits-all. We fine-tune every program to you and your family. And the thing is what I do that's so different than everybody else is you don't just ship your kid away. I work with you to help your child. So we fix the whole environment and what's going on. And teach. I put the power back in your hands. I teach you how to do everything.
I think what's important for the parents that have autistic children is that don't try to do it all by yourself. Get some help. Get some training. Get some education on what the best approaches are, and seek out help. I think that's very important because it with the parents that I know that have autistic children, it's very frustrating for them and very stressful that they can't teach their child to do the things the way they think they should be done, because maybe the child will learn if they do it differently, you know, and they need to have education and counseling to help them to understand that patience is so important when you're working with autism, and learning the correct ways to approach the children and to
but
introduce
there is
things
no
to
right
children.
Or wrong way to do it. It's each individual
yeah,
child
know,
is different.
Yeah,
and the thing
yeah,
is, Sashi, most parents forget this one.
Yeah. Yep.
It's okay to take a break. Yep. It's okay to walk away. It's okay to have a minute to yourself. If you have to go outside, if you have to go in a different room, do whatever. Most autistic parents, the reason why they are so exhausted is they provide 24/7 support, and they don't take care of themselves.
Yep.
And it's so important to understand this, is that a lot of what you do can either decrease the issues or increase the issues. When your child is having a meltdown, they're screaming, they're getting frustrated, you're getting frustrated. Your tone of voice that you use is key. And since you brought that up, I will go first into chaos plan and regulation techniques. First and foremost, when you're frustrated, you're upset, go-to is to yell. But here's the deal. And I guarantee you, most of you have never noticed this before. Your neck and your facial muscles, when you start getting stressed, are the first things to tighten. Your jaw muscle is what controls your tone of voice. The tighter your face is, the harsher your tone sounds. Just wiggling your jaw or shaking your head for a minute will loosen those muscles and will soften your tone. Taking that minute to breathe and softening your tone is what is the first step, because that means the harsher the tone, the more you're going to escalate. The harsher the tone, the more they're going to freak out. The more they freak out, the more you freak out. It's a cycle.
That's right.
So the first thing is loosening up. Don't ever tell them to calm down. Kids, when you tell them to calm down, they could if they knew. They get to that point of no return where they just cannot calm themselves down. This is where it's the hard part. If you need a break, walk away.
Yep.
Give yourself a moment if you need to. It's okay.
Take some deep breaths.
Yeah, it does. Here's another ticker on this one. And this happens a lot with the older couples, because we were all raised that eye contact is a sign of respect. With special needs kids, their brains do not work that way. If they're looking at you, they ain't paying attention to what you're saying. They're focusing so hard on focusing their eyes on you and paying attention to you. And it used to be the misconception. The thought used to be it was a dominating
It still is. If your parent is talking to you now and you're not looking them eye to eye, that means that you're totally, totally disrespecting them. Boy, you're not paying no attention to me, because the only way that they could, and even I refer back, I'm sorry, Mary, when I was teaching class, when I was like E.F. Hutton. When I talk, everybody listens. Does everybody understand that? Well, look, how do I know if you're listening and understand the words that are coming out my mouth? If you're not looking at me, then you're not paying attention, I told them. Wow. And now you're telling me, Mary, if they don't look you eye to eye, they can be hearing you, but you want them to look you eye to eye, you may not get that. Back over to you, Mary. I'm sorry about that, but I had to inject that right there, because the old teaching wasn't working. I'm guilty. It's charged.
I was too, and I couldn't figure it out for a while with my daughter. You know, you could tell if she's looking at you, you ask her to repeat what you said, she ain't paying attention. She doesn't understand what word you just said. But if she's screwing around with something, or she's looking down, or she's doing whatever, she can answer you back like that, because she's paying attention. Call me.
You tell me that's not different. You tell me that's not different. That's a whole different perspective on what we've been taught. And a lot of people can't do what they have not been taught. We're trying to get through to our children and teach them in a different way, because the ways that they was trying to teach them and control them and manipulate them and animatize them definitely wasn't working.
Like I said, if it doesn't work, why keep doing it? Another very important thing, and this goes against everything you've ever been told, ever been taught, because we've all been taught that emotions are bad other than happy. It's not okay to be mad. It's not okay to be sad. You're always supposed to be happy. When they are having a meltdown, take the time it needs to calm them down.
Amen.
Don't rush it.
Yep.
If you need a break and tag team, take a break. Let them keep going. Unless there's something in that room that they can hurt themselves with, take it with you. Otherwise, just let them go. And come back.
Yep.
You know, a lot of schools do this. They restrain children. It's okay to restrain them if they've got a label. You do it to a regular child, it's considered child abuse. That does more harm than good. if you're going to do something on that order, when they're kicking and fighting, make sure they're on the floor and move and guide their legs with the direction they're going. Don't force them to do something different. Just move them with them. Other times, just keep your distance. Just walk away. Let them be kids. Let them figure it out. Because the more you run to them, the more you aid them, they're not learning how to do it themselves. We let regular kids have temper tantrums, and we let put them in their room. It's the same with these kids. Just let, unless it continues on and you just can't deal with it, and whatever, but let them go.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they just need to express themselves.
Right. And then we know when I was teaching, and I spent 40-something years working with children, if your little bottom is not wet and you've had your food time or milk time or what time, and you're not wet and you're not hungry and you want to pitch a tantrum, and I'm going to try to jump right in there and throw more flames on the fire, more wood on the fire, and they say, well, you're not going to do nothing? I say, yeah. I'm going to let him go ahead and have his meltdown, and he'll be okay in a minute. You mean the best thing to do sometimes is not do nothing at all? Just let him be?
Yeah,
sometimes, yeah.
You know, here's the misconception. When we restrain children, especially kids like this, they go into fight mode, which means it increases their adrenaline, which means you just escalate that situation from a 10-minute issue to a half-an-hour issue. Now, if you decide you want to intervene, you want to help them, moving them, their legs, their arms, whatever, in the direction that they're going, if they're kicking, you helping them do that actually decreases and calms down the adrenaline. And it burns it out faster. No, we've let them walk away. We let them do their thing. It's still going on. Now what do? Now we start working and talking to them about regulation techniques, using ones. And this is the thing. It has to work for that child. And what works today may not work for tomorrow. Taking breath, that's great. But you can tell them to breathe. You can count with them. But sometimes for them, it doesn't register. So what we do is we breathe on them. We show them physically. We take extra loud breaths so they can hear it, and then we blow on them so that they can see it, and they'll copy you. That may not work for some kids. Singing, humming, for instance.
But Mary, to me, that's a powerful move. And the child calm them down stays to me, for lack of better terms, that's a slam dunk for me. It may not work for every child, like Mary said, but in the early stages and you haven't tried it and they've never seen you do it before, breathing and blowing, I used to blow lightly right in your nose, and it would cause the kid to blink, 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 blink. And if they was crying, I'd calm them down because the in their face would make them go, ooh. It's almost like pushing the refresh button when you do that, Mary. That's another. Man, you said earlier one. I'm not writing today, Mary. I hope you're writing. Oak Man, I hope you're writing, because we've had about 6 or 8 really, really strong points that we need to bring up in another topic conversation, in case everybody that needs to hear this is not tuned in today. Mary, I know you've been teaching it for years, but Oakman and I are learning while you're teaching. So thank you for sharing with us, because we don't know exactly who God's getting ready to send into our life now to where we're going to have the solution to their problem. Continue, Mary.
Starting Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, we will have a special radio show. It's called Autism, Changing the Narrative. We are going to go through all of this in more detail and more step by step of ways to help you and your family, how to deal with this, how to figure out what schools are good for you, which ones work, which ones not, how to help you and your child get the best to be able to achieve in life. Because you seem to, we forget, people like Einstein, for instance, Bill Gates, a lot of our Silicon Valley greats were considered dumb and stupid. Turned out they were autistic.
Yep.
So just because they have that label doesn't mean they won't achieve something if we allow them to. And treating them like age-appropriate children is crucial. And it's not just age-appropriate, emotional intelligence level. Like, so my son's mental age is like 12. But his emotional level is a 3-4-year-old.
God has blessed the autistic people. I don't care if they're kids or adults, but he's blessed them with very special skills. And the thing that we have to learn to do is to be able to bring that out of them, bring out the best that God has given them, and work with them on that and help them to develop it. And I think that's really, really important with the autistic children and the adults as well.
Correct. And it is. You know, the most crucial thing is, especially with these kids, a lot of parents allow behavior that wouldn't be acceptable if they were regular kids, and they blame it on their diagnosis or their label.
Yep.
The kid throws a temper tantrum. It's okay because they're autistic. They break something. It's okay because they're autistic. It's not okay. They still have to understand consequences for their actions. But they know because they get away with it that it's okay. The problem is these kids are smarter than you. They really are. Mine is smarter than me.
The first one I ever had was my deacon in my church. His little son, John, very special, very gifted. I mean, by the time he was 5, he was doing like the Rain Man. You know, he was a mathematical genius when it comes to stuff. Modern day times, he would be the Rubik's Cube king. But if he pinched a tantrum and Old Man was playing with a toy that he wanted and Old Man wouldn't give it to him, his tantrum was biting. So years ago, 20, 30 years ago, I could have been court-martialed, could be in jail now for child abuse. Because I said, I got to teach him. He's got to stop biting people. He bit my favorite little girlfriend in the nursery that morning. So I pulled a little Old Man to the side and bit him back. Left teeth marks in his hand just so he can understand that hurts. But I didn't know what to do at that time. I'm got this kid that pushes every kid down, takes their toy, and if they don't let go of it, wherever the hand is, he goes for the hand and he sets a hunk of teeth in there and bites them until they turn it loose. So I'm thinking, oh, well, he teaches this kid. It's funny now, but it wasn't then. But I didn't know what to do. I didn't know. I understood what it said in the books about autism, but until you deal with it face-to-face, man-to-hand-to-hand combat, I really didn't know what to do. But the only way that I could get across to little John that it's not okay for him to bite people is for him to feel what it feels like to be bitten.
Mm-hmm. Now, the best way to deal with that instead of doing that, because that's old school and now that's child abuse.
Yeah.
Because that's their defense mechanism. They don't have the words. They don't know how to react. But all kids know how to bite. It's normal. All kids do it. Regular 2- and 3-year-olds bite each other. It's just a fact of life. It's how they've learned how to, their tool to help them defend themselves. Now, when they're doing things like that, instead of telling them no, give them an alternative action. because their brains don't work like that. I'm going to extend the show. Giving them an alternative. You know, we don't do this. Do this instead. Giving them something else to as an action counters their action. And it's not something that happens overnight. Something you have to go through over and over and over again and be consistent with it. You know, my son was a biter and he was a pincher. And he does it more to mom than he did anyone else. But that's his. So the alternative for him is we have Play-Doh, we have slime, we have sensory boxes, or I call them meltdown boxes. So when he starts that, you can see his hands start doing the pinching before he actually gets to you. Giving him clothespins, Play-Doh, something to softball, something to put in his hand that he can keep doing that action without doing it to you. You know, with biting. Okay, I have no other better way to describe this, but chew toys. Here's the best part of this. Baby chew toys, no matter how old they are, they have little bristles on them. You know, most autistic kids do not like a toothbrush. You cannot get them to brush their teeth. You brush their teeth, it's a fight.
Wow.
It's still what the partners in my house.
Before we go off, guess what my answer? Guess what my aunt's solution was for little John's toy control. Every day from that day on out, after I got my bike back in, I started doing, okay, toy rotation time. Oh, man, you can't play with the dump truck anymore. You got to give it to Country Boy. Mary, I know you like to brush the little blonde girl's hair, but you got to go ahead and get the one with braids now. Everybody change toys. And then the biting stopped.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with at home, too.
Include, Bob, I got this from you. I'll make sure and keep it. Include, not exclude. And then how do I make everybody get along? Because everybody gets an opportunity to play with the famous toy that everybody wants to. And that was when we first got our toy that made noise. The one that lights up when you stump it down against the floor. Of course, everybody's attention wanted the new toy that lights up and makes noises and so forth and so on. But the rule is everybody gets a turn. Everybody gets a turn. So now, again, oh, man, I've got it embedded forever. Include, not exclude.
Right.
Exactly. And the thing is too, a lot of their reactions are based on what they deal with at home. You know, like my son had a hard time with sharing only because he didn't have to share. My daughter had her toys that she liked that were completely different than what he liked. So they played together in the sense they were in the same room, but they didn't intermix their toys because one was into trucks and dinosaurs and animals and the other one was into Barbies and princesses. So they never had
to
share because they didn't like each other's stuff. So teaching them how to share as they got older was harder. Because I'm not going to force my kids to play with a toy they don't want to play with.
That's amazing too, Mary. But see, that's a whole different perspective of looking at it. Two same scenarios, and that's what we're pointing out now, that what works for your child may not work for my child. I know I had Manny, one of my business partners, that was listening in, and when he called, one of the first things that he shared with us is I put them into these special classes and I paid a lot of money and it didn't work. So now what do we do now? We try and try and try again, but we're not going to be like those cute, my friends. Nothing. Oh, I love old. I collect antiques. Old means wisdom a lot of times. But we're not going to continue to do the same thing over and over again and it's not working. So we are here as the Hope Foundation. One of the first things that I learned years ago is we have RR Center Research Resource. If you don't know now, I just tell people life is nothing but a series of choices that we make now. You get a chance to choose. But see, if you don't use what you know and the people around you to help you. I used to, in the country, they used to say, oh, man, if you don't know, ask somebody. So people right there now, if you're looking for solutions, we find solutions together. What's been working for you might work for somebody else, but what's not working over there, you come over here to where we are, we might have some things that are working. That's why we got to co-mingle this thing. The things that are not working, we're going to eradicate them. We're not going to just sit idly by and see, well, that's not working, but we're going to continue to do it that way. No, 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 no. If it's not working, we're going to fix it. We're going to find a solution. We're going to flip it, turn it, and look at it from different perspectives. And don't be too proud nowadays to admit that you don't know, because a lot of us have kind of grown old, excuse my French, in our ignorance. That's okay if you don't have a high school diploma or a GED or a college education, but you cannot use your past as an excuse to block you from your future.
Amen.
The first step to figuring out what's working, what's not working, make a list. Like my dining room is full of whiteboards, and we use them for everything. But when we started out, we kept one board was board meltdowns, sensory issues, and we would write them down when he had them, what he was doing, and then we sat and thought about each one, what was happening before that happened. This is where the what question is so important. What caused it? What was going on around him during that time? And that's how you figure out what is going on, what causes the issues. So you can't treat the issues till you know what causes it. You can't figure out how to teach regulation till you know what's causing it. And you can start teaching regulation before it happens, but it works a lot better when you're in the heat of the moment. And that's why I tell my clients that I don't care if it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
If you're struggling, you don't know how to do it, give me a call and I answer. You can ask Country Boy. 90% of the time I do answer. No matter what time it is.
That's great, Mary. I want to say something if I could. I have tomorrow's show is going to be run by Ron Clayton because Bob Oakley has to work with his son tomorrow. So I would appreciate if you guys could come on the show and share some things with Ron. And I know he's going to do a great job because he always does a great job. But it's better if we have people on there also. And I've invited a couple other people, Larry, my friend, and Derek, my friend, to come on the show also. So if you guys can make it, we'd appreciate it. And so I'm going to run now because I have a date with an angel, my wife, for lunch. So I'll see you guys. And I'm running late already. So.
See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Mary, for all you do. And Country Boy, thank you for all of your contributions as well. And it's amazing that we're all working together as a team so well, and I thank God for that, because He's put us all together, and He wants us to do the right things for the right reasons for the right people. So all have a great day, and God bless you all.
All right, enjoy your lunch, Bob.
Yep. Bye bye.
So what I was saying was, I don't know, Country Boy, I lost my train of thought.
Well, it was just, I think you kind of threw me a curveball too. I usually could repeat back to you what you said last too, Mary, but I can't. The last thing I heard you say, Mary, is when people call you, they have option to call you, and even if they call you in the crazy hours of the morning, I was vouching for you that me and you talk at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning sometime. If somebody has a problem or something on their heart that they need to share, that you make yourself ready, available to talk to them.
There you go. Thank you. Because it's easier to learn to deal with the situation when you have someone walking you through it as it's happening than the hypotheticals. This is what happens. Now, when you say, ask what happened, what caused this, is the key, because it gives you the logical, it gives you the actual concrete stuff of what's going on. And like a lot of times now you'll hear my son, he'll say, well, what happened when he, after he calmed down, because he's trying to figure out what caused it so that he can prepare for it next time to help calm himself down afterwards.
It's funny you to say that, because I had a friend of mine that was born with rheumatic fever. He's my first cousin. He used to do crazy things and have blackouts. And then he would ask me the following day, Country, I know I did something crazy or stupid last night. What did I do? You know, so we have blackouts too as adults. We all do crazy things, and we might be sometimes caught banging our own head up against the wall, asking ourselves, how could I have been so stupid? What was I thinking when I did that? Oh, I must be talking about me. But yeah, sometimes we all make mistakes, but Mary, now that I'm around you, when you keep reminding us daily that we have to take the good with the bad, although we love the sunshine, we must still sometimes accept some rain. Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times we have the ugly that we try to hide. Is that, you know, to me, that's more important. You know, and one of the big things we're going to talk about Tuesday morning is people in the stores, people in public. You have these kids that get overwhelmed. You know, a lot of times the worst place in the world is when you're checking out at a grocery store. You have people all around you. You're stuck in between center aisles. You hear the noise from all the people in the store. Then you hear the noise from the cash register, all that beeping. It's an overload for kids. And you hear all these comments about how he's a spoiled, rotten brat having a temper tantrum when that has nothing to do with it. And it hurt my daughter a lot because she couldn't understand why people were saying mean things about her brother when that's not what was wrong. And not understanding everything doesn't mean you have a right to an opinion verbally. You can have your opinion in your head all you want. We just don't want to hear it. And I am thankful for the fact that, you know, I live in a small town and I go to the same grocery stores, go to the same Walmart, same Target. So the people around us understand what's going on and they help us out. And I've had some nice people that wanted to or tried to help us out in the process. But you expressing your opinion not positively has an effect. These kids can hear what you say. These kids have ears. They have brains. They understand. So when you talk about them as they're in that same area as you, it affects them. They may not show it, but it does affect them. And, you know, teachers do it all the time in school. Talk about kids. And they hear everything you say. And you can tell because they will gravitate towards one person over another because of what you say. So if you're getting frustrated or getting mad, whatever, walk away and vent yourself. But don't do it so that they can hear you, because it doesn't create a stigma.
And Mary brings me to that thought that we've been misled again and mistaught, that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words are powerful. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. We have to make a conscious decision that we're going to pay close attention to the words that are come out
our mouth, especially when you're around children. I hear some young kids now that are not even 4 or 5 years old using profanity. I know they didn't learn it from listening to the tapes and CDs unless the parents plugged it in, but their parents probably was cursing around them. So they're repeating. They're like little recorders. They not only mimic and do what they see, they also mimic and do what they hear. So we have to be conscious on what we say and how we say it. Some people know what sympathy is, but some people don't know what empathy is. And put yourself in their position. Would you like for somebody to say that about you? And again, it drives us back into what our hearts are all about right now. Kindness. Treat other people treat other people's children the way that you would want somebody to treat your children. If you don't want somebody to say, oh, that kid is stupid. Oh, that kid pitched a tantrum. Well, what if your kid pitched a tantrum? Would you want somebody in the grocery store to come to your aid? Or would you like for them to stand back with their shopping carts and whisper, wonder what's wrong with her kid. I wonder why they pitch a tantrum. I used to always wonder why kids waited until they got to the grocery store, excuse my French, to act a fool. Because that's a public place. Why they act that way? Because they act that way because sometimes they just do because we act a fool at home, but sometimes we act a fool in public. Sometimes we act a fool in a church. Sometimes we act a fool in a mall. Sometimes we act a fool and be loud because we're starving for attention. And a lot of times the only way that you can get attention is to be loud, to be a sound and brass or a cymbal so you're going to get that attention. So we just have to be very, very mind conscious on doing unto others as you would have them to do unto you. If you don't want to be laughed at, don't laugh at nobody else. Back to you, Mary.
You know, brought up a good point, potty mouth. Mom's got one. Mom's gotten better. So my son, as smart as he is, creative as he is, he's figured out a loophole in the potty mouth world. So instead of getting yelled at or getting lectured about not saying those words, he figured out creative ways of saying those words. So, for instance, if you hold your tongue and you say apple, what does it sound like? But, Mom, I'm not swearing. I'm saying apple. So now if you bug him and he gets upset with you or you do something to bug, make him mad, he calls you an apple.
Wow.
It's his way of telling you off. For a while there, it was, because you know the old Looney Tune cartoons or the old Popeye commercial or cartoons?
Right.
They had a picture of a donkey and called it was a jackass?
Uh-huh.
That used to be what he used to call you, was a jackass. It was either a jackass or a donkey. Goes, Mom, that's another name for a donkey. That's not swearing.
Well, I like an example very similar, Mary. A few months back before the holidays of last year, I was kind of running late for a meeting, and I'll admit I was speeding. I was running about 80 in the second to the back lane, but I was noticing that, oh, shoot, I got to get off on the exit, so I had to get over in a hurry. I put my turn signals on and slow down. That wasn't going to happen because all the cars were full run, so I had to speed up or I'm going to run by the exit. When I speeded up, the guy behind me had a big rebel flag in his truck window flying in the back of the truck. He speeded up too. I put my signal on. I waved my hand over. I'm coming over. He says, no, you're not. I said, yes, I am. No, you're not. The guy passed me on the right shoulder of the road. In old school, you know that center finger on your hand?
Mm-hmm.
We call it a bird. He shot me a go to heaven sign. And I'm thinking, wow, just because I want to get over in the lane, he don't want to let me over. So I know about road rage, and I wasn't trying to start any, but I thought I'd return the favor to him. So I caught back up to him, and we got back on Georgia 400, and I drove up. I was two lanes over. He looks over at me and makes his ugly face and sticks his tongue out. A grown man.
So I shot him 2 finger fingers. He was telling me to go to heaven. I told him to go to heaven too. And I start thinking, wow, that was kind of crazy. Would you rather have 2 fingers up or 1 thumb down? It was a gesture, but it still goes back to treat other people the way you, I didn't really like the way that I was treated at that time, but my retaliation wasn't good either. So if those things that we don't understand, certain things we do understand, we have to turn our patience, spiritual channel on, and sometimes we have to just leave it there. Sometimes we have to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, and know when to come back later and try it again.
My kids hold up 3 fingers and they say, read between the lines. Mom, I didn't use that finger. I showed you 3 fingers.
Wow.
If there's a loophole, kids are going to figure it out. My kids figure them all out. It's like, it's not a potty mouth. It's a toilet mouth.
Well.
Because potty goes in the toilet.
So that's what you're not saying. And I was just saying, and I'm going to go to Mary. Seek and you shall find. There are solutions to every problem. If what's not working is not working, we got to keep looking for an answer, looking for a solution. What worked for you may not work for me, but what worked for Mary's kids, and you go, wow, now, I never thought about that, might work for you. So we're going to encourage you guys to tune in again. Mary, give them the information, because this is one of those to-be-continued conversations because we haven't come up with all the solutions to the problems, but we're going to, are going to come up with solutions one at a time, and that's what we want to do. We're going to change lives. We may not be able to save the world like my mama told me, because he said to remind them, country boy, I got the whole world right in the palm of my hand, but we are going to change lives, your life, one life at a time. Back to you, Mary.
Yes. So, first step, find the cause of the problem. Figure out what caused the problem. Because you can't find a solution to the problem until you figure out what caused the problem to begin with. Every Tuesday, 9 Eastern, and you can listen to it playback and replays on all major podcast stations, we will have a show exclusively set up just for autism and special needs. Talking about what it is, ways to deal with it, ways to help you as a parent, and ways to help your kids. From regulation techniques to understanding what it is, to understanding everything that's going on around you and what causes these problems. Simple things as changing routines, figuring out predictability and what causes it. So we are out of time for today. Join us tomorrow, Family Time with Bob Oakley. Friday will be, once again, special host, Captain Len Kane. And starting next Thursday will be a morning show. Time is still to be determined, and it'll be all about health and nutrition with a new special guest host. The Juice Queen herself, Georgette Reynolds, will be co-hosting her own show starting next week.
Awesome.
And we got a lot
That's
of things
awesome.
In the
I'm
works coming up.
To that.
Yes, sir. So,
because just the things that she shared, I know we're ended out, Mary. The things that she shared, I've been able to share with at least 5 or 6 personal friends just because of that one episode that you're doing. Must add again that because of your broadening perspective, your big, wide vision for the world, Mary, seems like I didn't realize that I needed improvement, but seems like all these different areas in my life, based on the topics that you've been having and sharing with people on the show, I have to thank you again, for changing my life in a lot of these areas that I didn't even need. They needed updated and it needed to be changed. But now that you keep bringing out unsung heroes and special guests and people that have knowledge and expertise in all these areas, it's allowing all of us to grow in areas that we didn't even realize that we needed growth in. So I just thank you again, Mary, for your vision, for you sharing what your children are doing, sharing what you're doing in your household, and sharing it with the world so we can help make for a better world. We love you. We appreciate you. And I'll make sure and join you again on another day. Give the little princess and the little man a kiss for me, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Have a good day, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.